Hello and welcome to OU's Nach Yomi. You can find this year posted at ouradio.org/nach or on my website, ericlevy.com, under the recording section. This is Rabbi Eric Levy, and I'm pleased to bring to you Yeshayahu, Perek, Chaf Dalet, Isaiah chapter 24. Nestled between the Masa'ot HaGoyim, the prophecies that peer outwards towards the other nations, with one exception, and chapter 28, where the prophet looks inwards to the problems of the Jewish people, calling out at the beginning of each chapter, Hoy, are chapters 24 to 27. Chapter 24, like the chapters that follow it, is something of an enigma. While its structure is difficult, as it moves from destruction to salvation to destruction and then finally to recognition of God, the real challenge is in identifying who is being destroyed and who is being saved. It is unclear if the chapter itself follows in the footsteps of the Masa'ot HaGoyim and that it is speaking to the other nations, or perhaps it is directed inwards to the land and to the people of Israel, as in the chapters that will follow this section. Furthermore, it is unclear whether Isaiah is referring to something that is taking place in his lifetime, or whether he was referring to a prophecy of the future at the end of days. What makes this chapter so enigmatic? Essentially, is its style. The style is apocalyptic. Now, that word apocalyptic needs some description, because the term apocalyptic has two meanings. The most famous of the two is the noun, the apocalypse, which refers to the end of days, such as in the chapter of Zechariah. V'haya Adonai l'melech al kol ha'aretz b'yom ahu yiyah Adonai echad u'shmo echad. On that day, God's name will be one and God will be one. But apocalypse itself, it actually comes from the Greek word to be hidden. So it could apply to any prophecy which is laden with mysterious imagery, which makes it difficult to tell what the prophet is in fact referring to. Often we assume that if a prophecy is apocalyptic, that is, if it's difficult to interpret, it must be talking about the apocalypse, the end of days. However, this is certainly not always the case. Chapter 24, like the chapters that will follow through chapter 27, are certainly written in an apocalyptic style. For instance, the key word in the chapter is Eretz, or land, and it shows up 16 times in the chapter. That's more by far than the closest other chapter possibly in all of Tanakh, and certainly in Sefer Yeshayahu. It is, in fact, the subject of the first sentence. Hine Adonai bokek haaretz uvo leka ve'iva fanea ve'hifitz yoshev veha. Behold, God is emptying the earth, laying it waste. He's twisting its face. He is scattering all of its inhabitants. Note that the tense shifts from present tense to past tense. In the next verse, it'll be in future tense, because in poetic literature, especially apocalyptic poetic literature, time all flows into one. It's difficult to tell when exactly this prophecy is taking place. What's more important about this verse, though, is the focus is on the land. God is emptying the land. He is destroying the land. He is twisting its face. That is, not the face of the people on the land, but the face of the land itself. V'hefitz yosheveha, and he's scattering the people who are dwelling on the land. This stress on the land shows up in verse 19 as well. Ro'a hit ro'a ha'aretz. Por hit porera eretz, mot hit motata aretz. The earth is breaking apart. The earth is crumbling into crumbs. The earth is tottering, completely fallen. Our problem is, though, with all the emphasis on the word eretz, 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 we don't know what the word eretz means. It could be referring to all of the world, or it could be referring to some specific foreign country like Assyria or Babylonia, or it could be referring to Israel itself. And if it's referring to Israel itself, which part of Israel? Just the northern tribes, which were exiled during the lifetime of Yeshayahu? Is it referring to Yehuda, the southern part of the country, or to all of the promised land sometime in the future or sometime in the past? Since this word is the guide word, the Mila Amincha of the chapter, we're going to have to return to it and understand it. However, let's take a look at a few other unknowns as well. In verse 10, there is a city which is described as being destroyed. Nijbira Kiryat Tohu Sugar called Bayit Mibo. The city of nothingness will be destroyed and all houses will be closed to entry. So we have a city being destroyed, but what city is it? Is it Jerusalem? Is it Shomron, the capital of northern Israel? Is it Nineveh, the capital of Ashur? Is it a metaphor of the destruction of every significantly inhabited city in the world? And what is the reason for all the destruction of both the land and the city? In verse 5, we are told that they have transgressed teachings, exchanged rules, broke the Brit Olam, the eternal covenant. But these terms refer to supercategories of sins, not to specific sins. They could be committed by anyone, both Jew and Gentile. So both with the area of destruction, the time of destruction, the city of destruction, and the reason of destruction, all is apocalyptic. All is very unclear. This dilemma of when the prophecy is taking place, or referring to, and to whom the prophecy is given, is at the heart of all of the Mefarshim, of all the biblical commentaries. If you strip away all of the specific textual analysis, you'll find that all of them are dealing and grappling with this very issue. For instance, the Radak says, Shehi atida al umot ha'ulam. It is a future prophecy on the nations of the world. And then he goes on to say, V'chol pur anut ha'gadol hazeh shezachar, all of these great tribulations that are described, Yihyeh bimot ha'mashiach, will be in the days of the Messiah, B'gog u'magog, in the famous war of Gog and Magog, the war, the end all wars against Jerusalem, Ubishar ha'umot, and amongst all of the other nations. On the other hand, Targum Yonatan says the prophecy is against Israel, probably during the time when the 10 tribes were exiled. And this happened in the sixth year of Chizkiah, the king of Yehuda. Rav Yosef Kara agrees that the prophecy is looking into Israel, and so does Rashi. But Rashi says that the focus is specifically on the people of Yehuda, not the people in the north of Israel. Rashi actually equates this prophecy with those in chapters 7 to 12, warning about what will happen during Sancheiriv's march against the Fertile Crescent in general, and Israel in particular. Malbim divides things up. The Malbim says that the first section is referring to the loss of the 12 tribes, but then the second section, which also deals with Israel and not the other nations, is describing the effect of the final battle of Gog and Magog on the people of Israel. I have a different take on this, which is based on the stress of the word Eretz, Eretz, and Eretz. If we turn things sort of upside down, and assume that the language of twisting the surface of the land and scattering the inhabitants of the land and stripping the earth bare are not actually speaking metaphorically, but speaking literally, that what we have is a description of a vast and massive earthquake which shakes up civilization. Because as I mentioned, the famous literature that talks about the apocalypse, the end of days, although certainly not the only one who describes the apocalypse such, is Zechariah. And Zechariah in chapter 14 also describes an earthquake as being an indication that the final days have arrived. Zechariah says, V'nastem kasher nastem mipnei harash b'mei Uzziahu melech Yehuda uva Adonai Elohai kol kedoshim imach. It describes a gathering of all the nations to make war against God, and God himself will stand on Har Zeitim, and there will be a massive earthquake, and the people will run much as they ran during that great cataclysmic earthquake during the times of Uzziahu. Therefore, I believe the whole chapter is, in fact, not only apocalyptic, but is about the apocalypse as well, as described in Sefer Zechariah, Yoel, Yechezkel, and other Sefarim. Here, we are talking about the days of Mashiach. However, like the Malbim, I break down the chapter to two sections. We'll see where that is later. One which is referring to what will happen to the other nations. That is, the prophecy looks out like a Masah. And then in the second half of the chapter, the vision turns inwards towards how it will affect the nation of Israel. My translation, as I go through the psukim, are very much going to be based on this approach. However, if you apply any one of the other Mefarshim approaches, you're going to wind up with a slightly different translation, and occasionally I'll relate to them as well. Following the destruction is described in verse 1, which, as I said, I believe is a massive earthquake, which will shake the entirety of the land, not just the land of Israel. We see in verse 2 a description of a complete breakdown of the social order, which is likely to take place following such a cataclysm. V'haya k'cha'am k'kohen k'eved k'adonav k'ashivcha k'gvirta k'koneh k'mocher k'malveh k'loveh k'noshek k'asher noshe bo. There will be no more distinctions, neither the general populace nor its leaders or priests, neither the servants nor masters, neither the female servants and the female masters, neither buyers nor sellers, loaners nor borrowers, neither lenders of goods nor their borrowers. The following verse returns to the destruction, description of destruction. Hibok tibok ha'aretz, in the very same words as we had in the first verse, the land shall be emptied out, v'hibos tibos, and it shall be surely plundered. Ki Adonai diberet adavar hazeh, because God has spoken. The impression there is that it's not up for grabs anymore. It's not up to trying to somehow avert the disaster. When it says ki Hashem diber, the impression is that it has been signed, sealed, and will be delivered. The phrase hibos tibos means to be plundered leads many of the Mefarshim to say that we're referring to a time when Sancheiriv or somebody else will come to the land of Israel and take the booty from the as part of a war. I think a better sense is, since the verse 2 describes a complete total breakdown of the social system, which is likely during a massive earthquake where essentially all of your governmental structure disappears. Almost had a little bit of that until we pulled ourselves together during Katrina. The social structure completely broke down into anarchy until things could be put back together. So hibos is the kind of stuff that you'll see where disasters occur, which is that people go around and everybody is fighting for themselves and struggling for themselves, and looting becomes the norm. Next, we start moving away from the land itself towards the people, the inhabitants of the land. Avala navala haaretz, the land is desolate, it is withered away. Umlila navala tevel. Here, that which is destroyed and withered away is not the land, but now we use the word tevel. While tevel could be a synonym to aretz, there's also an impression of a populated land. So the people begin to get involved in the picture. And finally, we have umlalu merom haaretz. That which has been cut away or withered are the leaders of the land. So the shift is from the land itself as an inanimate object which is suffering the pangs of the earthquake, to the people, and then finally the leaders of the land who are, well, suffering alongside the earth that they inhabit. And finally, we get into the cause for all of this destruction, for the reason why the land is rebelling. V'haretz chanefa tachat yoshveh, the land has become defiled or profaned under its dwellers. And in this case, tachat may not be so much underneath its dwellers, although literally it's appropriate also, but it's because of its dwellers, that is, because of the sins of its dwellers. And that's what the verse will go on to say. Ki avaru torot, because they transgressed instructions. Here, torot, probably from the word hora'ah. Chalfu chok, they exchanged their rules. Heferu berit olam, and they annulled the eternal covenant. It could be that we're talking about the Israelite people and that they've transgressed all of the Torah. It could be that we're talking about the Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach found in chapter 9 of Bereishit. Ach basar b'nafsho damo lo tochelu. You could eat fruits, vegetables, animals, but as long as they're not alive. Then it continues on. Shofech dam ha'adam ba'adam damo yishapech. A person who kills, he will lose his life. These are the seven Noahide laws, which we assume contain basic humanity, basic human morality, which are required for not only Jews, but for all nations of the earth. So it could be the nations that are transgressing. Again, it's really impossible to tell. Rav Yosef Kara, not Rav Yosef Karo, but you have Rav Yosef Kara, a student of Rashi, has a very clever idea, trying to match up Mida Keneged Mida, measure for measure. He says, since the land is doing the rebelling, then the rebellion must be against the land. And he says that the laws, the Torot and the Chukim, which are being transgressed, are Israel specifically transgressing the laws of Shemitah, of leaving the land lie fallow every seventh year. And following with that seven-year psychologic, he does point out that the word Brit Olam is used specifically for Shabbat, that they were breaking Shabbat. It's an attractive idea. And in fact, the word Shabbat will show up in verse 8. However, it seems more likely that it's really speaking about an eternal law between God and all of the nations. But of course, that's my view of this particular prophecy. If my view was that this prophecy was for the Israelites, then I would be focusing on sins that would be specific for the Jewish people, although I think I would be very cautious about saying that the Jews walked away from the entirety of the covenant. In that case, I would probably prefer Rav Yosef Kara. Either way, the results are in the next verse. Al-Kain Allah Achala Eretz, therefore this curse is eating up the land. The Shemu Yoshev Evan, the dwellers of the land, they are being punished. And therefore, the dwellers of the land are being singed or being burned or dwindling down to nothing. v'nishar enosh mizar, and there are very few people left. The word asham means to be guilty, but it also means to be punished. It's one of those things about guilt and punishment, not only in the Jewish religion, but in the Jewish language. The word avon can either mean a sin or it can be a punishment, which is why when Cain says to God, Gadol Avoni means so, the Mefarshim, it is not quite clear whether he means my punishment is too great to bear or my sin is too great to bear or to forgive. Where in verse 4, we had a desolation and a withering away of the land and the people of the land. We now, following that desolation, and in verse 7, we have a withering away of
happiness.
Aval tirosh lila gafen ne'enchu kol simchei lev. Now, Yeshayahu has warned us a few times about those who drink wine for the sake of getting drunk or those who seek happiness for the sake of happiness. It's not entirely clear if there's an implicit criticism that part of the sin is this wantonness and drunkenness, which led to the moral decline, which then in turn leads to the earthquake, which in turn leads to the social decline. But he does castigate about the fact that there'll be no more wine and happiness. Aval tirosh umlala gafen ne'enchu kol simchei lev. There is no new wine. The vine languishes, and revelers all sigh in grief. Shavat msos tupim. The happy sounds of the drums are ceased. There is no more calls of pleasure and happiness. The happy sounds of the lyre have ceased, of the kinnor have ceased. Bashir lo yishtu yayin, they drink their wine, but no longer in song. Yemar sheichar lishotav, and the liquor is bitter for those who drink it. So it's not so much that the wine and the liquor and probably the food doesn't exist, as much as there is simply no reason to be happy about the fact that they are drinking. Nishvara Kiryat Tohu, the city of emptiness is broken down, whether it's empty because it's broken or whether it is broken because it was spiritually empty is not clear. Sugar Kol Bayit Mibo, every house is closed from entry. Tzvachala Yayim Bachutzot, people are yelling out for wine in the courtyards. Now, in this case, they may be yelling because they don't have wine, but more likely they're yelling to sell wine. Nobody wants to buy it because there's no pleasure in drinking anymore. Arva kol simcha, all happiness is now dark like night. Gala misos haaretz, the pleasures of the land are exiled. Nishar ba'ir shama, there is nothing but desolation in the city. Ushia yukat shar, and destruction amongst the broken down gates. Remember that gates are not just a physical sense of the city, but the gates of the city are the place where the judges sat, where politics was done. They were the entrance place to the market. So it was really an indication of the life force and the political force of that city. Now, why is there all this unhappiness? Is all there desolation? Because this is all that's left amongst the land. Amongst all the nations. Kinokef zayit, like a few olives left on a tree after it's been beaten with sticks to pull down the olives. Ke'olelot im kala batsir, when the harvest is over, it's like the few grapes left on the vine. There's so few people left, like it mentioned back in verse 6, v'nishar enosh mizar, that there's no government, there's no system, there's no happiness, and regardless of how much wine you may be able to find on the streets, nobody is drinking it, nobody is singing, nobody is dancing. There's so much death and destruction and so few survivors that this is the state of the cities. Again, I think here the prophecy faces outwards, as is evident from verse 13, Kicho yiyeh b'kerav haaretz, because this is how it will be amongst the land. And what is the land? Betoch ha'amim, amongst the nations. I think that means that not just Israel is suffering, but all the nations of the earth are suffering from this cataclysmic event, probably an earthquake, which really shook the main systems, the main civilizations of the earth. And now essentially we have a sea change, a shift in the mood of the Perek. From all this destruction with so few people left, these few people in verse 14, Hema Yisu Kolam Yaronu, they will lift up their voices and they will sing out, Bigaon Adonai, with the pride of the Lord, that is, or about the glory of God. Sahalumiyam, they will sing from the seas. It's a difficult expression, sahalumiyam. Some see it as being that they will sing out even more than they sang out during Kriyat Yam Suf, during the splitting of the sea. That would, of course, be the commentaries who feel that this prophecy is focusing on the Israelite nation, the survivors of the Israelite nation, after the coming of their destruction, or the destruction of most of the people. So says, among others, Rashi. And, of course, the word Gaon Hashem reminds us of Ashira Lashem Ki Ga'o Ga'a, and that's the tie-in to the splitting of the Red Sea. Rav Yosef Kara sees it as a reference to Tehillim Kuv Zayin, Yordei Hayam Ba'oniot, Osei Melacha B'mayim Rabim. Those who do business, sailors who do business on the great seas, they are incredibly happy when they manage to survive a storm or just the dangers that the sea normally brings. In my opinion, this prophecy is not referring to a localized destruction in Israel and those who survive it, but rather a global destruction across the world and those few who manage to survive. So it could be that Sahalu Miyam, they rejoiced from the sea, doesn't mean more than they did in the sea, but rather literally in the islands of the sea, they are rejoicing God's name. I think this fits very well with the second part of the next verse. Alkein Ba'urim Kabdu Hashem, and so Ba'urim, which I'll translate in a second, Kabdu Hashem, they gave honor to Hashem, Bi'iye Hayam, among the islands of the sea, they gave honor to Shem Hashem Elohei Israel. They gave honor to God's name. And there, of course, the sense is that the dwellers on the islands of the sea are the ones who are giving out or calling out in happiness and recognition that God is responsible for the destruction, and God is also the one who has decided to save these few. The question is Ba'urim. So Chazal understood Ba'urim as lights, that is, with lights one should try to give honor with God. Rashi, most of the Farshim feel that Ba'urim from the pits or from the valleys or the cracks, one gives honor from God, and this would be a sense that after the destruction of the earthquake and the cataclysm, those who are still surviving in these holes in the ground would give honor. Amos Chacham of the Dat Mikra feels that what we need here is the opposite of the word Be'ei Hayam. So just like Be'ei Hayam is to the west of Israel, Urim is to the east of Israel, and he feels that it means one of the ancient Mesopotamian cities, which fits nicely, of course, with the word Ur, like Ur Kasdim, the famous city of Ur in Mesopotamia. Now, here in verse 16 is, I think, where we have our shift of perspective. The camera moves away from the people. That is, originally the perspective was all of the people of the land, and the survivors of this horrible cataclysm are recognizing that God is the one who saved them, and therefore they're calling out in recognition to God. In verse 16, we switch to first person plural, we. Miknafa aretz, from the corners of the earth, and here I believe it's not the corners of Israel, but the corners of all of the earth, zmirot shamana, we have heard these songs. This perspective would be from Israel's perspective. The prophet is now speaking to his people and saying that at this point, we here in Israel are going to hear all of this rejoicing. What are we going to hear? Tzvi la tzaddik. How beautiful or glorious is the tzaddik, i.e. God. How beautiful is God? Va'omar, and here's the shift, but I say, or I said, razi li, oy li. I'm wasting away, I'm wasted away. Sorrow to me. Bogdim Bagadu. These faithless have acted faithlessly. Veged Bogdim Bagadu. The faithless have broken the faith. In my opinion, who are these faithless? They're not the faithless of Israel. They're the faithless of the nations that act against God. The prophet is calling out for the sake of the Jewish people and saying, they've survived. They've survived. But they're all traitors. They're all coming here against us. They're all faithless. Do they really deserve the salvation that they've received? So there's no shift in time. Malbim requires a shift in time because there's a different mood. First there's a mood of salvation, and now there's a mood of sorrow. But the reason why there was salvation and happiness is because there was salvation for the non-Jews. And then the non-Jews recognized God and came out with their happiness. But the prophet says, that's not fair. They were never with you. They were always against you. And now that there's a catastrophe, all of a sudden they're with you. So who says that makes them frum? Who says that makes them worthy? And woe is to me, because what will happen to me now that they're saved? This is very similar to the idea in Sefer Yonah, where Yonah doesn't want to go and save Nineveh, because what will happen to the Jews when Nineveh is saved from destruction? Better that they be destroyed. And the prophet lets them have it. Pachad vafachat vafach alecha yosheva aretz, O you dwellers of the land. And yosheva aretz always means the non-Jews, that is the Gentile nations. He gives them a little riddle. Fear and pits and traps on you, all of you dwellers of the land. Now he explains, there will be those who run from the sound of fear. And this fear may be earthquakes, it may be the coming armies, it could be a number of things. Yipol el apachat, you'll fall right into the pits. Va'olem mitoch apachat, and for you, those who manage to pull yourselves out of the pits, yilakein bapach, you'll be trapped in the traps that are set up right next to them. Why? Ki arubot mimarom niftachu, because the heavens themselves will open up their windows, v'yir ashu moste aretz, and the very foundations of the earth will be shaken to their core. And what is about to be described is the cataclysmic events that we see in Sefer Yoel and Sefer Zechariahu. Roa hit roa'a haaretz, por hit porura eretz, motit motita aretz. The land will be breaking. The land will be crumbling. The land will totter and surely fall. Noah tanua eretz kashikor. The earth will sway like a drunk. V'inodada kamlunan. Shake back and forth like a temporary hut. The kavad aleha pisha. The iniquity will be too heavy upon it. That is, the weight of the iniquity, not of the land itself, but of the people who dwell on it, will be too great. V'nafla v'lo tosif kum, and it will fall, never to arise again. And here we speak probably not about the land so much, although that too, but about the iniquity of the people living on the land, as described in Sefer Yeshayahu, those who come, Gog and Magog, who come against Eretz Israel, to come against Yerushalayim, they will be struck by this horrible earthquake. They will be knocked down and never rise again. Finally, in verse 21, we have the classic language of the apocalypse, and this is why I feel that it's convincing that not only is the prophecy apocalyptic, but we're speaking about the final days, messianic days, the war of Gog and Magog. We have the words, V'haya b'yom ha'u, it will be in those days. Very similar to Zechariah, and many, many places where God is talking about the end of days. God will remember, in this sense, remember to punish the hosts of heaven in heaven, and the lords of the earth on the earth. That is, both the heavens will be battled against, will be punished for rebelling against the Jewish people, and so will the lords of all the nations. Usafu asefa sir al bor, and there will be a great gathering to the pit, which means the jail. If you take a look by the story of Yosef, bor is synonym for jail. The sugaru al masger, and there should be these kings of the earth should be locked up in these prisons. Umerov yamim yipakedu, and God will forgive them. Here the word yipakedu, which means he'll remember them to forgive them, as opposed to remember them to punish for them. But he will do so only after many days. The chafra halavona, and the moon will be ashamed. Uvosha chama, and the sun will be ashamed. Ki malach Adonai tzvaot b'har tzion b'yushalayim. Ki, in this case, would be when. When God, the Lord of hosts, rules in Zion, in Jerusalem, v'neged zkenav kavod, and he reveals himself to his elders, he reveals his glory to his elders. This is, of course, very apocalyptic language. Who are these lords of the heavens? Are they the angels and officers of the heavens that fight with the enemies against Israel? Is it saying apocalyptically that at the time of the Messiah, the sun and the moon will shine differently, which is pretty much what it says in Zechariah, according to Targum Yonatan, since this is a more localized prophecy, not a messianic prophecy, it simply means not that the sun and the moon will be ashamed, but those who pray to the sun and moon will be ashamed. But either way, there is a mass change in the way the world works, and the perhaps naturally, if not supernaturally, and God will rule in Jerusalem. Neged Zkenav Kavod is essentially, I think, the prophet saying, Zkenav, his elders, in this case, I think the Jewish people or the leaders of the Jewish people, they will have the honor that's due to them when everybody recognizes God's glory in the times of the Mashiach.